Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday morning on GCN, we expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, we'll open your eyes and hopefully change your mind towards some of these things which most people claim. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand that which is actually occurring behind the headlines, while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years, so you might understand how these events will shape your life. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage Yahweh on his terms by way of his one and only covenant, and through his always dependable, Torah teaching. Yeah, it's us who should depend upon it, but it is, in fact, dependable. And we do so that with God's guidance, we will be able to replace religion with reason. Our phone number for those who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said during this program is 877-300-7645. 2 days ago, I explained why the murders at Sandy Hook Elementary School occurred. There, and indeed elsewhere, murder is the result of a failure to exercise good judgment. The enemy of judgment is political correctness in our society, and it pervades our schools. In the nation's classrooms, as a direct result of the nation's most influential religion, socialist secular humanism, and its moral code, political correctness, we are most literally manufacturing murderers. I had hoped that might be enough, but this morning I read the headline on the Los Angeles Times. It reads, Gun Lobby's Grip Loosens on Congress. Gun Lobby's Grip Loosens on Congress. This, of course, is presenting the gun lobby as the bad guy, and their stranglehold on Congress is now abating in the wake of what occurred in Connecticut. Well, the cause of murder is not too many weapons. If it were, America would be the most murderous nation in the history of our planet. Never has any nation held such a monopoly on the development and deployment of arms. If possessing a gun is bad, why do patriotic Americans all but worship their military and their first responders, all of whom are armed to the teeth? If laws prohibiting things like gun ownership is good, why is it good to ignore the law of the land in this regard, which is the U.S. Constitution?
I have a real problem with their want to go after guns. I've been around guns my entire life, and I've never once wanted to take that gun and go use it to harm anyone. And that's really because of the teachings that my dad gave me, that, you know, you don't want to hurt anyone. You don't want to, you know, these are very extremely dangerous things that you have to, you should respect. And when a drunk driver gets in a car, and if he gets in a crash and kills somebody, you don't blame the car for that drunk driver.
There's, I think, between 40 and 50,000 people who are killed a year in automobile accidents. Two-thirds of those have alcohol as a contributing factor. So, are we to eliminate and remove cars from our highway because they were the instrument? Are we to eliminate alcohol because they were a contributor? Is the gasoline we put in our cars, therefore, like the bullets that people put in their guns?
Exactly. That's the wrong way to look at it. You need to put responsibility on the people that are doing these things.
But personal responsibility is the antithesis of socialist secular humanism. there is no individual and there is no responsibility as it relates to socialist secular humanism. And so our schools, our media, our politicians are communicating the exact opposite thing that your father taught you. And that is our problem.
And then that's the thing we have to change. It's not guns. It's not the violent crime hasn't plateaued off. It hasn't like had a huge increase over the years.
I think that murders in America, and I haven't read the statistics recently, but I think most of the articles on violent crime shows that there has been a tapering off of violent crime. There were 12,000 murders in America over the last year. About 80% of those murders were involved drugs. It was the America's legislation outlawing drugs, drug use, has created the most murderous, the greatest cause for perpetrating murder in this country. And of those murders, of the 12,000 murders, only 300 of them occurred as the result of a rifle. And so going after assault rifles as a result of, as a means to prevent murder totally and completely inconsistent with the evidence. It is irrational. It is unreasonable. It tells you that either the people pushing the legislation are unaware of the facts, or they have an agenda upon which the facts are hostile. And so they ignore the facts for the express purpose of perpetrating their agenda. But I've always said, if you have to ignore evidence and reason to promote your agenda is not worth promoting. Now, what I'd like to do this morning is I'm going to share with you a little bit about from the article that came out of the Los Angeles Times, and then I'm going to turn to Justice Scalia's opinion in the most recent Supreme Court decision regarding guns, because it presents an entirely different perspective than does the Los Angeles Times. Under the headline, speaking of the gun lobby's grip being loosened on Congress, we read, even NRA allies are getting in on the push for new restrictions as Obama backs a ban on assault weapons. Now, mind you, these people they're talking about are senators and congressmen. These individuals are sworn to uphold the Constitution. You cannot restrict the right to keep and bear arms without amending the U.S. Constitution. If you're not going to push for a constitutional amendment, then you are going to break your oath, the oath of office under which you serve. Those are your choices. If you want to limit the possession of arms in America, the only way you can do so honorably is to amend the U.S. Constitution. Dateline Washington. The gun control debate sharpened Tuesday as President Obama backed an effort to revive an assault weapons ban spearheaded by California Senator Dianne Feinstein, who is poised to have a powerful new role as head of the Senate committee overseeing gun laws. Boy, there's a sense of fairness, right? The Senate's number one opponent to guns is going to head the Senate committee overseeing guns. Calls for federal gun restrictions are mounting following last week's shooting at an elementary school in Newton, Connecticut, even from lawmakers who had rejected them in the past. The National Rifle Association and its allies have successfully kept such efforts at bay for years. Can you imagine this alleged journalist writing this article? And he's attributing the lack of restrictions, a relative lack of restrictions, on guns to the NRA and its allies not the U.S. Constitution. And matter of fact, in the entire first page of this, the headline article of the Los Angeles Times, there is no mention of the U.S. Constitution. It goes on to say, but the slaying of 20 children have roiled the politics of gun control and now challenge the gun lobby's hold on Capitol Hill. Now, I don't think there's anyone at Capitol Hill that has sworn an oath to abide by and to protect all of the rights and decrees delineated in the U.S. Constitution. Excuse me. I think they all have signed that oath, and none have signed an oath to say that they're going to abide by the guidelines of the NRA. So not a single person in Capitol Hill has said, I'm going to uphold the articles and conditions delineated in the NRA's charter, but they have all signed an oath and sworn an oath that they will uphold the U.S. Constitution. Well, this is what the U.S. Constitution says. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Justice Scalia delivered the opinion of the court on a Supreme Court case that I think bears considerable interest in this particular topic. The date of this ruling is June 26, 2008. The operative individual, the respondent here, is Dick Heller. Dick Heller was a special police officer who was authorized to carry a handgun while on duty at the Federal Judicial Center. Now, he applied for a registration certificate for a handgun that he wished to keep at home, but the District of Columbia refused. Thereafter, he filed a lawsuit in federal district court for the District of Columbia, seeking, on Second Amendment grounds, to enjoin the city from enforcing the bar on the registration of handguns. And so it is that ruling where the Supreme Court obviously upheld the United States Constitution that we will focus, since we have politicians that are leading us in the wrong direction once again. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. To Shattering Myths, you can join this discussion by calling toll-free 877-300-7645. We'll be with Rod from Indiana in just a moment. But I'd like to reemphasize the point made during the first segment of this program, that it's a lack of judgment that is the leading cause of murder, not the implement. You know, if mass killing is bad, why is Lincoln a hero? If mass killing is bad, why does America celebrate FDR sending 400,000 Americans to their deaths to avenge the deaths of 3,000 at Pearl Harbor? If killing is bad, why did the United States respond to the 3,000 individuals who were killed by Islamic suicide bombers by invading two countries, which led to the deaths of over a million people? I decided that during the break I would look up the causes of death in America so that we might have a way to focus and have a proper perspective on the 12,000 people that are killed each year by as a murdered each year, of which only 300 and some odd are murdered as the result of a rifle. Heart disease claims 600,000 American lives each year. Cancer, 567,000 lives each year. Let's make heart disease and cancer illegal. And while we're at it, let's add respiratory disease, which takes another 137,000 lives. Stroke, 129,000 lives. Now, when we pass the fact that we are mortal, that we live in flawed, decaying bodies, and that we move from something that has some element of judgment or choice in it, but in this case just random acts, we find that accidents, unintentional injuries, claim 118,000 Americans each year. Now, of those, many of those are car accidents, where a lack of judgment plays a role. The majority of car accidents occur as a result of one or both drivers being influenced by alcohol or some other drug. Or they use bad judgment and they speed. They use bad judgment, they run a red light. Alzheimer's claims 79,000 Americans each year, diabetes 69,000, influenza 53,000. Intentional self-harm 37,000, suicide 37,000, murder 12,000. Of those, the vast preponderance of them are as a result of turf wars and disputes on the distribution of illegal drugs. Those are the numbers. Now that you know the numbers, I'd like to bring Rod into the discussion. Rod is calling from Indiana and has a comment on gun control. Good morning, Rod.
Good morning, Yada. I was discussing this general topic with an individual I know that was, up until a month ago, a member of the National Guard. I think he was around 43 or 44, and he was been laid off. But he didn't seem to be very impressed by the populace holding guns, as most of the weapons that people have are 22s, and the bullets wouldn't penetrate the armor of the body armor that soldiers wear. He also said that we have units in our military or National Guard that are specifically trained, and their function is suppressing insurrection in this country. So
yeah,
our country is definitely aware that our leadership is definitely aware that the possibility exists that the citizens might
revolt. That, by the way, is the purpose of the Second Amendment. The purpose of the Second Amendment is in recognition that if government is the only part of the country that is armed, then it will eventually become tyrannical. It will remove all rights from the people, and no matter what document protects the people's rights, it will, as is the case in the gun debate, will ignore the people's rights and will become tyrannical. And that is what's happening in America. And while I'm not a proponent necessarily of guns, I happen to own guns like you, I shoot guns, but the reality is that that's how the country was framed. It was framed under the basis that we had to have guns to protect against the government becoming oppressive, and the government recognizes that people may choose to use that provision. And so this whole debate is really a debate of freedom versus tyranny. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yadam. You can join in this discussion by calling 1-877-376-45. We have Rod on the line, who was kind enough to stay over after the break. So I'm going to ask you a question, Rod.
Okay.
Why should Americans obey a law passed by people who do not obey the law? The law of the land of the United States is the U.S. Constitution. If you pass a law restricting the people's rights to bear and keep arms, you are disobeying the law of the land. So why should Americans obey a law passed by people who do not themselves obey a law?
Well, I don't think that we should be compelled to obey that, because it's an illegal action that they're doing now. I won't personally turn in the 122 rifle that I have in my possession. It belongs to my son. If they come around and gather them up, why, then I'll hand it on over. Now, what worries me, I'm going to move a little bit away from this. What worries me about this whole thing is that either there's one of two reasons for them wanting to do it. One would be a psychological thing. If you disarm people, that makes you more dependent upon your government.
Yeah, and easier to control.
On yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the first possibility. And what really worries me is that if, from a strategic standpoint of view, the only way that it would be important to have the populace disarmed from a strategic standpoint of view is if they were going to go around and actually start rounding up people. Now, that may sound like, oh, that's just, you're just being paranoid, but I'm from Michigan, and I know some friends that have an uncle that worked on a project up there west of Cadillac, Michigan, where a very large impound area, and replete with barbed wire fences and guard towers and rooms with shackles on the walls was built, 25 years ago. And it's still there, and they have guards there. And it's never been used. There's large prisons that I've heard that have been built out in on the West Coast of Washington, I think it is. Large federal prisons. It's like they are getting ready to impound and put people in concentration camps.
This
is what worries me.
Yeah, Rod, whether or not that is true, and I have also read the articles and I've tried to investigate to determine whether or not the United States has built and retains large concentration camp facilities for the detention of those who would protest against our government's tyranny. The fact remains that America is by far the most incarcerated society, not only in the world today, but in world history. And the difference between how many people as a percentage of our population we incarcerate and the next closest country is by many magnitudes. I mean, it's not even close. It's almost 1% of the adult population of America that is imprisoned or is part of a parole system. So we have since ceased to be a free country. You know, as the world's largest military, outspending the rest of the world combined on our military, you know, we're not the purveyors of peace, we're the bearers of arms. Our nation is a living hypocrisy. One of the great examples. Why would we listen to a man give a eulogy at a mass murder and say that mass murder must stop when that very man, the President of the United States, is the most egregious mass murderer in America? Obama, without due process, without rule of law, has killed thousands of people at his order. Choosing individuals says, I don't like that guy, and he'll send a drone, and they will be executed. So the largest mass murder, thousands of individuals, some U.S. citizens, women and children among them. And so the world's most egregious mass murderer, certainly America's most egregious mass murderer, is leading this crusade against mass murder. We're a nation of hypocrisy. Let's stay with us, Rod. Feel free to jump in here at any time. I'm going to go over this review that Justice Scalia wrote for the majority opinion of the, if not the most recent, certainly one of the most recent Supreme Court rulings. And it begins, it says, we consider whether the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., its prohibition on the possession of usable handguns in a home violates the Second Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And the court found that it did. The Second Amendment is naturally divided into two parts. It's prefatory clause, and it's operative clause. So because I've shared the Second Amendment with you, and it has two parts. It's a prefatory clause and an operative clause. Now, this is their finding. The former, which is the prefatory clause, does not limit the latter clause grammatically, but rather announces a purpose. The Second Amendment could be rephrased, because a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms should not be infringed. So what did the writers of the U.S. Constitution have in mind? They recognized that when a government is the only institution that is armed, the people lose their freedom. They have no means to prevent their government from continuing to pass laws which make the people more and more dependent and more oppressed. Now, the right of the people, Justice Scalia wrote, this salient feature of the operative clause is interesting because it codifies the specific right of the people. The unamended Constitution and the Bill of Rights use the phrase right of the people two other times. In the First Amendment, the Assembly and Petition Clause speaks of the right of the people. And in the Fourth Amendment, the people have rights relative to search and seizure. Nowhere else in the Constitution does a right attributed to the people refer to anything other than an individual right. So it's the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Now, the reason that this was being discussed by Scalia is that the twisted lawyer who brought the case on behalf of the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., said that the right to bear arms was only codified under the pretext of participating in a militia. Now, of course, the United States government hunts down and prosecutes those who are part of militias, also ignoring the U.S. Constitution. But what Scalia is writing here is that the people's rights to bear arms is not limited by the purpose statement, which is the necessity of having militias if you want free governance. If you want to retain your freedom, the people themselves must have militias, so that the only fighting and the only means to protest, to control, can't be the government itself. So he's saying that, let's be clear about this. This right is the right of the people. The right of the people is the opening clause of the U.S. Constitution. We the people. So it's the people, not the militia, that have the right to bear arms. Nowhere in the Constitution does a right attributed to the people refer to anything other than an individual right. What is more, in all six...
Can I jump in here?
Sure.
Okay, now, you're dealing this whole thing from a political standpoint of view. Now, my concern is that the situation that occurred in, I believe it was New Zealand, and there's one other country, it might be Australia, where they took away the arms from the citizens here in the last 10 years, and what they found was that the crime rate tripled in rural areas because suddenly people realized that the people living out, like I do by myself, in the woods aren't armed anymore. So they can walk in and they can take what they want. They can kill, they can rape, and they do, and they did. And this does the right to bear arms is, to me, more a matter of I would like to, if the situation deteriorates, be able to go out and purchase weapons to protect my family and my household. And apart from the human problems, we also are having a problem with animals like bears.
Sure.
A woman in North Carolina was feeding one of their 6,000 bears, actually two of them, and they turned and ate her here recently. We have, sometimes at night it sounds like we got 50 coyotes out screaming. And I'm concerned about wild animals. If I can't have a gun, there's times I come home late at night or I go out at night, and I hope I'm safe. And I would like to be carrying something other than a machete.
Yeah. And, Rob, the argument that you're bringing here is a sound one. You're bringing the argument that there is a value to people being armed, and you're listing the reasons why it makes sense for people to be armed. My approach to this has indeed been different. And my approach has been twofold. One is that murder is not the result of weapons. Murder is the result of people failing to exercise good judgment. And that the primary influence in our society today is socialist secular humanism and its replacement moral code called political correctness. And the primary enemy of political correctness is judgment. And so we are literally manufacturing murderers. We're manufacturing young men and women who are unable to think. The second argument that I'm raising, and that doesn't mean that this argument is better than yours, and it doesn't invalidate yours because yours is sound. It's that it is pure hypocrisy to pass laws restricting the right to bear arms in the United States of America because the founding document, the law of the United States of America, is predicated on not restricting the people's right to bear arms. And so I'm just dealing with the pure hypocrisy of it. And the reason I chose that approach is because it's the exact same approach we use in this program to expose and condemn all forms of politics and religion. What we routinely say is that if you agree that God inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and yet you adhere to religious teachings which are in conflict with that foundation, then there is no chance whatsoever that your religion is valid. And so the argument that I'm trying to bring on the against, if you will, the Obamas and the Feinsteins, is that if your laws oppose the foundational law of your country, the Constitution, your laws cannot be valid. What you're doing is invalid. Stay with us over the break, Rod. I enjoyed your point and your contribution. I am young. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yana. The point that we are trying to make today, I think, is overriding. It influences every aspect of our lives and our society. In the United States, the right to exist as a governing body and to pass laws is provided exclusively by the U.S. Constitution. Congress has the right to pass laws only because of the U.S. Constitution. When Congress passes laws that are in direct conflict with the explicit instructions in the U.S. Constitution, it undermines its own foundation. And therefore, there is nothing more egregious in a nation founded on the rule of law, which is what a republic is, than conceiving laws that contradict the very foundation of that country. It undermines its foundation. That is the point that we're making here in this program. The same thing exists in Christianity. Paul's letters directly contradict and undermine Yahweh's constitution. Yahweh's constitution is his Torah. Paul's letters seek to do away with the rights and protections offered by the Torah. Anytime a human institution contradicts its foundational documents, it proves itself to be a fraud, to be unworthy of your trust. And so in this argument against assault rifles that is being promoted by senators and congressmen today and by the President of the United States, what we see is pure hypocrisy. What we see is evidence that no American should show allegiance to their country when their country is led by these kinds of individuals. What we see is an example of what happens in religion. And so this is really a seminal moment, hopefully for many listeners to the program, where you get a glimpse in this single act. Whether you are for or opposed to guns, it's irrelevant. whether you own a gun or not, it's irrelevant. What is relevant is the foundational document of the country that is being undermined by those whose only authority is based upon that document. And them contradicting their own foundation. You know, Scalia, when he was...
That's the only logical conclusion that a thinking person can come to, that if they aren't going to live by their own rules and regulations, why the ones that are supposed to govern them, that they don't have a right to govern themselves. And I have personally, back when Richard Nixon was going through all the problems with Watergate, gotten disgusted with politics and the situation. That's when I started to lose faith in our government.
And that's a good thing. And that's a good thing. And there were thousands of other reasons prior to that. You can study the history of Woodrow Wilson, of FDR, of LBJ, of the hypocrisy even of Ronald Reagan, of King George the First and the Second, George W. Bush, 41 and 43. As you look at the hypocrisy of these men, even Obama and Clinton, as you look at the hypocrisy of these men, saying one thing and doing another, saying and doing things which are opposed to the very principles that they said that they would govern upon. What you recognize is that your country is not deserving of your allegiance. That it will absolutely strive to make you as dependent upon it as is possible, all while depriving you of your free will and ultimately failing to perform as promised.
Well, another thing besides,
that's why God,
just besides you have this like mega deal, we're not living by the Constitution on a level of their personal, what are these people actually like? I know two people. One was in the Secret Service and guarded one of our presidents during the Vietnam War era. And he was outside the doors when all these meetings were going on, and he said it was absolutely horrendous how they cussed and swore, and it was just extremely vulgar. And then there was another individual I know here in Indiana that was guided to fishing tour some of our local congressmen.
Rod, we're unfortunately at the end of our hour, but you used the operative term. They are indeed vulgar. You should not place your faith in them. You should not vote for them. You should not trust them. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects.